Welcome to the Loving God, Loving People podcast. Today's going to be a little bit different, just to let you know straight up. Talking about sex trafficking today and just some things that are of a sensitive nature. And so if abuse or something like that is part of your past, use your own discretion. Also, if you're a parent, I want to encourage you to listen to the full podcast because it will help you in protecting your children. Thank you for listening. And with that, here's a very straightforward conversation about somebody from our church that has taken courageous steps of faith. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Loving God, Loving People podcast, where we talk about what it looks like to follow Jesus in our everyday lives and how, in the end, all that matters is God and people. Here's today's episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with us. We have a very special guest with us today, Lori from the Starbright Foundation. And Lori and her family have been at Sun Valley for a long time. How long have you been at Sun Valley, Lori?
Oh, gosh. I'd say probably 18 years, maybe 17 years. Long time.
That's almost as long as I've been here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll be here 20 years this summer, so 17, 18 years. And you were talking to me earlier before we started, how many family members do you have involved at Sun Valley?
So I have 10 grandkids, so all of my kids, I have kids that go to the Casa Grande campus.
Yeah.
And then my daughter and her kids go here, so, and then my dad goes here, and lots of our friends now go here, so a lot of us.
That's cool. You got generations.
We do.
At Sun Valley.
We do.
Well, thanks for being part of the church.
Thanks for having us.
Well, let's talk about the Starbright Foundation. And we're in this series called Courageous Faith. And so all through the series, and Lori and her husband, Larry, spoke with us that third week in the series Courageous Faith. All through the series, we're just talking about simple steps of obedience, kind of following these nudges that God gives us. And then it's stories of people like you in our church and what God did. So we started with Ben the first week, and then the Watsons were the second week, and so you guys are the third week. But the Starbright Foundation, we'll talk more about that specifically here in a minute, all began with kind of a little whisper and a nudge that God gave you.
So I've always felt like I wanted to serve. I've served in many different areas, prison ministry. I've led praise and worship at churches. I've done outreach. I've always had a heart to serve God, but something was still missing. And I would sit in service week after week and just feel like there's just something not right. I wanted to do more. And there was a lot of things you can do to serve just to pass the time, but I really felt like there was a whisper or a nudge. And then you stood up one day and talked about how you got started. And you said, don't wait for somebody, you know, to invite you. If you feel God calling you to serve, you need to serve. And I went home that day and I just felt like you got to get up and do it. You got to motivate yourself to do it. And maybe it's a whisper. Maybe God's telling you it's time to move on it. So I called some friends of ours who was a pastor and his wife, who ran a bed and breakfast in Iowa, and I was telling them, I just feel like God's calling me to do more. And they used to rescue people out of satanic ritual abuse. So they were very knowledgeable. I volunteered with them, so I was a little bit knowledgeable, but not like them. And after we talked about it, they said they were feeling in the same kind of a nudge. And they're like, we're willing to move out to Arizona. What do you think we should do? And I was like, I don't know. I know that the Bible says that God knitted us in our mother's wombs and with a purpose. Let's just figure out what our purpose is. And so we literally went around the table and I'm like, you're good at counseling. You're a pastor. You're great at talking. And your wife did a bed and breakfast. She has the gift of hospitality like nobody else. And my husband's handy and he did security. And I thought, you know what? I'm a little bit scrappy. I loved every police show. I'm good at figuring out clues. I'm musical. I'm kind. And we just kind of sat there and went through all of the things that, you know, we knew God, had made us to be. And we sat down and we knew that we wanted to help children. We wanted to help somebody who couldn't get out of a situation without the help of an adult, because there's so many amazing causes. But children, they can't do it without help from an adult. So we just started Googling all of the top crimes against children and realized gosh, child trafficking is huge. It's huge in Arizona, and no one's talking about it. Mm. At the time, I think there was one other organization that was helping like 18 and up or just the young adults, but yet the child trafficking was at an all-time high with an average age then around 13. And I thought, how could this be that no one's talking about it? And so we just decided that's what we're going to do. And then we thought, what should we name it? And we sat down with a list of 500 names and we kept narrowing it. And I said, let's just take everything off the table and let's picture a child who doesn't know Jesus, who's just in this horrible situation of terror. They don't even know how to pray. What would a little kid do? Maybe they would look up and wish upon a star that, you know, they could be safe. And so we thought, Starbright, we'll name it Starbright. And so we just dove right in and we started going to trainings, Homeland Security, FBI. We started watching every film we could on trafficking and really making ourselves knowledgeable about the facts. And we started going undercover. We had a film crew and we would just dive right in and go undercover into the inner city.
Wait, let's rewind for a second. Okay. So that like sounded really fast. So you get convicted about church. God has more for me. Did you already have fighting trafficking on your heart? Or are you just like, I love kids. We want to do something for kids.
I think I've always been on the justice side of child abuse. Like,
yeah.
I don't like seeing kids get hurt. They're God's children. And I do think we need to have a voice for them and they can't speak out for themselves. So that part of it, just abuse in general, I didn't know a lot about child trafficking, but it terrified me for the kids when I started reading about it and hearing about it and talking about it.
So you called these people that had some experience there. You put together I'm going to call it the dream team. So the dream team gets around the table and then you just took this step of, we're going to fight this.
Yeah.
And so the first action was, we're going to hire some video people and just dive right in.
We just dove right in. We got in a van and we went into the inner city and started like, let's see how long it takes us to find a child that's being trafficked. And boom, like the first night, it was less than an hour.
Wow.
And we followed this child and, you know, just tried to learn everything we could. But we knew, hey, this is dangerous. We can't go in and just rescue this kid. Mm-hmm. But we learned about it. We, you know, called authorities on it. And I think it was just a matter of a couple weeks after that, we thought, man, we really need a safe house. What are we going to do with these kids if we rescue them? Where are we going to put them? And so that was on our heart that we needed, we didn't want these kids to heal in a facility like a hospital after they've been traumatized and raped.
Are you scared when you're doing this? So I'm just imagining first time out, right? Did you talk to the authorities first? This is out there. We're going to look for it.
Yeah, we were just, it was really more of a learning thing for us. Let's see how it happens. Let's see, you know, what we can learn about it. And, you know, we did some training on it. We sat in on a lot.
You had mentioned that, Homeland Security and things like that, but then you just went after it.
We just went on it. And I think the unknown is always scary and it's a scary topic. And I do remember, I think I was down on Van Buren and I had, the cheer coach from the Boston Celtics, and I had, I think Jordan Sparks' mom was with me, and she's like, I want to volunteer, I want to go with you. And so, you know, we jumped in this van, and we had somebody that was a doctor, and then she had a friend who was a film crew person, and she's like, we'll go, and we'll learn together. So we all just jumped in, and I remember my boys calling me, and they said, where are you? And I was like, just somewhere in the city. And they're like, where? I'm like, I don't know, somewhere off Van Buren. And then they're like, Mom, what are you doing? And I said, you know, I'm not going to tell you because I don't need you coming down here dressed like Rambo. Like, I am just learning and I'm trusting God. And so we just rolled with it and learned what we could learn. And the more that I learned, the more angry I got.
Yeah.
I started feeling like these kids have no one speaking out for them. Like we're it. Like there is no other organizations doing this. Like we got to speak up. We got to talk about this. And so, you know, we decided we probably should get a safe house, but we didn't know how to do that. We had no money.
When you were doing this, were people trying to talk you out of it? Were people saying that's too dangerous? Were authorities trying to talk you out of it? Or?
No, not really. Okay. I think at the time the authorities weren't really trained on it. Like the cops that we talked to were like, it doesn't happen around here. And we're like, yeah, we saw it. Like, we saw it. And
and this was 14 years ago?
Yeah, this was 14 years ago. And so I don't think people were talking about it at the time. And I thought, well, maybe I could speak at some churches. And so I remember going to a couple churches and they're like, you know, we really want to bring this to the forefront. So you can set up your little booth in the lobby. Don't approach anyone. But if someone talks to you, it's okay to answer their questions. So I was willing. I set up my little booth. I had some pamphlets with some stats on it. And then people came up and they're like, oh my gosh, we need to do something about this. And then we started getting some volunteers and some more doors opened. And we sat down with a businessman who found us that knew Pastor Mike. And he said, can I meet you guys for lunch? And we said, yes. And so he said, tell me your 5-year plan. And so I whipped out my 5-year plan and he said, okay, put it away. I just wanted to see it. And he said, go find yourself a house and I'll buy it for you. Mm. We were like, what? So we did. We went, it's when the market had tanked and we got a really good deal on a house. And
now, okay, let's just, and you're a realtor as well, right?
And I'm a realtor. Yeah, so we got a smoking deal on
that.
We did. We did. We looked and we prayed and we were like, this is it. We got to get a house. And so we started off in the Queen Creek area and we ended up moving to Gilbert. And so, we just wanted it to be a place of healing for kids that were broken, for kids that were exploited, for children that, you know, a lot of times they don't come out of good families where they have the support, and sometimes it's the families that sell them. We wanted them to know this is what it looks like when you have a mom and dad. We wanted them to see a dad mow the lawn and a mom who cooks. So we decided, we wanted to open a house for trafficking. But then we realized that a lot of these kids come out and they're very drugged up when they come out of trafficking. And, well, you can't do that in a neighborhood. But we scored a really nice property that's kind of a horse property. And we decided we're just going to step out in faith. And so we waited and waited because, you know, we called down at DCS and stuff. And they're like, well, we want to make a licensed house just for this. But I just don't think they had anything in order in place yet. And we didn't want to wait any longer. So we thought, well, let's get foster licensed and get some foster parents in here that can love on these kids. And then God just took it from there. So we have had 29 children live at the Starbright House in the 14 years. And so a lot of them stayed with us for years.
Yeah.
And we saw the healing and I became Aunt Lori and we just became an extended arm, hands and feet of Jesus. We just were an extension of love for these kids and we saw healing and we saw growth and kids came to church with us and it was amazing. But I think, you know, you're always scared to step out, but when you see the change that happens in the children, we just kept trying to get bigger and bigger and just trying to do more and educate in the schools so there wasn't a need for rescue. And God just took it. He took it because it wasn't us at all.
So you did the house, and I also know you do a lot of advocacy. You do a lot of speaking. I mean, trafficking now is much more on the forefront, and my guess is God used you as part of that, especially in our state. Mm-hmm. And you have an opportunity to speak on some pretty big platforms here and there.
Yeah, well, they asked me. They called up and said, hey, we chose you to speak at the Four Corners Conference. What's that?
Yeah.
And it was huge. And, you know, my initial reaction is, are you sure you want me? You want to pick somebody else? I think that was probably what I said a lot in the beginning. And they said, no, we want you. We want you to stand up and speak on behalf of the kids. And there was a lot of churches there and a lot of pastors. And that opened more doors. And then we got a call from one of the Arizona Cardinal players. And he said, Miss Lori, I know you're doing this thing with trafficking. My wife told me. And he's like, this girl from our church, she was taken into trafficking, and I think she was in it for a couple of weeks, but he said she's broken, and there's no place to put her here, so they sent her out of state to a lockdown facility to keep her safe, but the whole family's broken because there was other children, and can you help? And we said, sure. God opened the door for it. We're going to move on it. So in doing that, I became very close friends emotionally with the mom because it's an emotional thing.
Sure.
Your young daughter is raped and it changes the world of everybody in the household.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we became very close to the whole family, and the mom started going around with me speaking and telling the story. And then we got a call from the Dr. Oz show. And I think I was out to lunch with Pastor Mike and his wife. And I think when the call came in, I just hung up. And I said, they said that was the Dr. Oz show, but how would they know about our little tiny charity? And so I said, nope, they're not going to trick me. I'm not going to get tricked into this. Mm-hmm. And then they kept calling back and they kept calling back. And they said, just wait. We saw you on a Channel 3 story that you did with, you know. And they named the reporter and everything, and they said, oh, we'd like you to come on the show tomorrow. So we were all like, I don't know. Maybe they should pick somebody else. But we did. We got on that plane, and I was really terrified, not for me, but because I had, you know, the mom with me, and I had a child with me, and my hands were all sweaty, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, what if this is not legit? And we got there, and there was like a really, really tall guy, like 6'6", and he had a sign that said, my name is Fenn, and then he had my name down underneath it. And I was like, how's it going, Sven? I was so nervous, and he didn't talk the entire way. We get in this car, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is it. We're done. I mean, I was so nervous. And then they did pull up to the studio, and we were able to do a show with Lisa Ling on sex trafficking. And and that opened more doors, and we just thought, we're just going to keep being obedient. We're going to just I said my fear scriptures. I kept telling myself, you know what you wrestle against, and it's not flesh and bones. And say your fear scriptures and cover yourselves. And started speaking at a lot of churches and then some schools. And they said, hey, how would you like to train some police officers? And we're like, wow, really? And we ended up training some officers at Wild Horse Pass and that had not even heard about trafficking in Arizona. And just a lot of doors open and a lot of avenues to be a voice for the kids.
Yeah, so our verse of scripture for this series, what we're talking about, and just listening to you, I'm like, oh, you're living out this verse. It's 2 Timothy 1:7, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And I'm sitting here thinking, so some of us, we don't do anything because we have this thought of, you know, I'm just this realtor, I'm just this, I'm just this that, you know, what am I going to do with this overwhelming problem? Because what you're talking about, I mean, there's more slaves in the world today than there was
any time in history.
Yeah, than any time in history. So, you know, it has to feel, and you were telling me some of your stories and things even here recently, but it has to feel so overwhelming to be involved in this. How do you push through that? What would you tell somebody that has a little whisper, but they're thinking, you know, what am I going to do?
I started looking back at some of the things I went through as a child and a teen or a young adult that was really difficult for me. And I started thinking, man, I went through hard times. Like, how did I get to this place where I could do this? And then I looked back and thought, you know what? I was like in holy boot camp. Like, he was training me through these hard things. He was making me be able to be this voice for the kids, making me strong inside. And now I can walk through hard things with other people. And in the moment, I think when you're struggling with something that you're going through, I don't think that you see that part of it because you're blinded. We have our earthly eyes and you just see what's happening in front of you and you just see your pain and your hurt. But when you look back at where you've come and how much you've grown and what was the purpose of me going through that, I think it helped me push through. And I want to say, like, if you don't look through your earthly eyes and you put on your holy bifocals for a second and you look up and you see, what is he doing? How is he orchestrating this for the good? Because what was meant for evil, you know, can be used for good. And how did the Lord work this? And he worked it all out. And did we fail? Of course. We didn't know what we were doing at the time. Yeah. And he would pick us up and brush us off and put us back on the path. And we never felt bad about ourselves because at least we are trying to do something.
Yeah,
and that's,
yeah.
You know, there's just, it was such a big problem. It was the tiny little bite out of the elephant, but we tried.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys just did a cannonball in the pool this one. I mean, you guys just went for it. And I've seen over and over again, and I appreciate you sharing that. I've seen over and over again, it seems like God's biggest ministry in and through us comes out of some of our greatest personal pain.
Right.
And there's something, and I loved the verse that you quoted, and that's from the story of Joseph in the Old Testament. What you meant for evil, God meant for good. But you and I have to choose that.
Right.
And so thank you for choosing, you know, to fight the injustice.
And I think when people come and they say, what can I do? My first reaction is, you know, tell me what you've been through. And I show empathy, but they'll be like, oh, I went through this, and, you know, or maybe I was raped as a child, or I went through this horrible. And inside I'm thinking, yes, praise Jesus, because I'm thinking they were in holy boot camp. And people with scars make the best servants.
Yeah.
You know, the wounded make the best warriors. Mm-hmm. And so our volunteers, I love the people that have been through hard stuff, because you do, you get gritty, you get, you know, you get scrappy, and you got that fight in you.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot of the kids that we work with. I think they're going to grow up to be scrappy. They're going to grow up to want to serve because they've seen people pour into them.
So I'm going to give a pastor line, a preacher line, because that's what I do. One of the things we say at Sun Valley is pain will change you, but not necessarily for the good. You have to choose that. But when we choose that, man, God can do amazing, amazing things. Let's change gears here for a second. Okay. So I am the parent of a 21-year-old and a 15-year-old. Okay. And I know that parents are concerned at large, you know, of what's going on in our world. And kids are trafficked, both male and female. What are some things that you would tell parents that we need to be aware of? What are things we need to be looking out for? Kind of give us some advice as parents on how to better protect our kids.
Well, when we first started, I would say a lot of the trafficking was happening in the community. But predators have to have access to the kids. And so we would think about, where do the kids hang out? At the mall, at the parks, and, you know, the video game places, and, the, you know, the gyms. And so Starbucks, any place like that. And now, because social media and cell phones have changed and progressed, the kids really have access to the entire world when you hand them that cell phone. Right. And our parents teach us when we're young, be afraid of stranger danger, watch out for the strangers. But they don't teach you, be afraid of your gaming buddy. They don't teach you, be afraid of somebody you're on a chat room. And so because I am down in the schools with the kids, we learn a lot from the kids. We learn a lot from the people that have solicited them, the different kinds of predators that there are. And I could tell you that it can be used for good, but there's a lot of evil on the phones.
Yeah.
And I would tell parents all day long, take your child's phone. You own the phone. You are still a parent first, and make it a dumb phone. You can go in and take all those settings and make it a dumb phone. So if your child tries to get on, the simplest of chat rooms, the simplest of games, it's going to send you a message, and you're going to be able to say, let me research this as a family, as a parent, I'm going to research this, and we'll let you know if it's safe. But we're not seeing that. We're seeing parents that let their kids go to bed with the cell phones. Yeah. When they're sleeping, they're on these chat rooms. And right now, sextortion is a really huge problem. So let me tell you what that looks like. During COVID, there was a game out. I might have the name of it wrong, but it was something like boredom. And it was geared for 11 to 13-year-old girls. So you had to say what you were doing in your bedroom when you were bored. Who wasn't bored during COVID? So the child would be in there behind closed doors, and they, you know, they're on there with a group of friends. So you have little, you know, chat rooms within the game. Just like Minecraft, all of them have the side chats. So just say what you're doing when you're bored. Playing Barbies, doing my nails, doing my, you know, doing my math, cleaning my room, and then a little jewel will pop up. You can get 500 rubies if you take the challenge. And now you have all the people in the side chat, which are groomers, and they're like, take the challenge, girl. You can do it. You're going to get 500 rubies. And so the girl's like, I accept the challenge. Well, the challenge is you need to lift up your shirt for and count to 10. So she doesn't want to do it, but now these people are egging her on, which are groomers, and she does it. And what they do is they screenshot, and now they're showing her the screenshots in the side chat. And they're saying, now we want you to do this and this and this. She's like, I don't want to do those things. well, you're going to do them or we're going to show this to your parents, to your church, to your school. Everybody's going to know how you are. So now she's trapped. Is she going to go and tell her mom and dad? I lifted my shirt up. So their grades start slipping. They start cutting. They get depressed. You know, there's a lot of anxiety. And I tell parents, if they come and talk to you, you need to be that soft landing spot because we live in a different world. You need to not react. You need to hold it in and say, as a family, I love you and we're going to get through anything. You can tell me anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of the piece that's missing. And so kids are not going and telling their parents and they're getting blackmailed. And sextortion is a huge, huge crime right now. Mm. But also the video games. We had a father call. He was a firefighter from Chandler. Ex-military. This guy was I think he was Navy SEALs. He was a tough dude. And he called me crying. And he said, "Miss Lori, can you help me? The principal gave me your card. I think someone's going to take my daughter." And I said, "Why do you think someone's just, you know, tell me your story. Calm down." So he said, "I'm a tough dad. I don't allow any passwords. We have one computer. It sits on the island. I go through the history every night. The kids don't get on anything without my knowledge." But he said, "I was working in the garage, came in with grease on my hands. I was going to wash my hands. And I lean over my daughter, Katie. And Katie's making a list. And she's talking to somebody on Kick. And she tells this person everything about her. Her name, her sister's name, where she goes to church, where she goes to school, where she takes dance, the dog's name, just everything. And dad's watching her talk to this man, and he says, "Katie, what are you doing?" And Katie turns the computer off. He said, "Katie, you know the family rules. You know how I feel about this. You tell me right now how this happened." And Katie said, "Okay, well, last night I was playing Minecraft, and somebody on Minecraft said, it's amazing how everybody in our little group here that plays a game, because, you know, you play with the same people a lot of times. It's amazing how all of us are coupled up." And then she said, "Wait a minute, Katie, you don't have a boyfriend." So she gives Katie a problem to make her feel awkward. Then a guy swoops Katie into the side chat and says, "Wow, I guess they didn't realize I didn't have a girlfriend. We're a couple of losers, aren't we, Katie?" And she's like, "I guess." And he said, "I'll tell you what, when you go home tonight, make a Kick account. You and I can pretend we're boyfriend and girlfriend. So you tell me everything about your life. I'll tell you everything about my life. And then if anybody asks, we can just pretend we've always been boyfriend and girlfriend." So Katie said, "Okay." So that's what Katie was doing. Like a job application, she was telling him everything about her life. So I said to Dad, "You need to sign on to Katie's Kick account and see if Katie sent photos."
Yeah.
So Dad said, "Katie, you know, sign on to your account." And Katie says, "I don't remember the password." So Dad's like, "Sorry, Miss Lori, Katie doesn't know her password." And I'm like, "Dad, she made the account last night. She knows her password.
Yeah.
You need to tell her how important this is and sit her on the couch and tell her she needs to come up with a password." "Okay, okay, I got this." And he was really struggling. He called me back an hour later and he said, "I'm sorry, Miss Lori, Katie really doesn't know her password." He said, "Would you mind talking to Katie for me?" And now I'm like, "Okay, I will talk to Katie for you. Put Katie on the phone." And I said, you know, because I'm thinking, how savvy is this little teen that she has daddy so snowed that he really thinks she doesn't know her password?
Well, yeah, she doesn't want him to see what's on there.
Right. So I said, "How old is Katie?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you. Katie is 8. The whole time, I think we're talking about some teenage girl. Katie is 8. And this is what I take these calls 5 times a day.
Oh, gosh.
So kids are desensitized. They're doing the bunny ears and the little stuff on Snapchat. And if you go talk to these teenagers at school, I say, "Where do you think those pictures go when you're snapping that nude picture you're sending to your boyfriend or girlfriend?" And they're like, "In the cloud." And I'm like, "You know there's not a cloud above your head, right? You know it's a hard drive." And so getting down and talking to the teens, just so we've learned that, you know, they just trade pictures like it's a baseball card.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying. And so we get the calls every day like this of kids getting solicited on these video games.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to repeat back a few things we can do today to help protect our kids. Don't let your kid have their cell phone all night long. Like, let's put it up at a certain time, put it in a drawer, make sure we know what's going on the cell phone. So we have passwords and things like that so we can check things. You mentioned Kick, Snapchat.
I mean, there's no all end. Of them. There's right, because there's so many that we can't even keep track of all the new ones that pop up every day. But Discord, I mean, they're on so many sites where they're able to chat. So anytime you're able to chat with somebody, within that game, your parent's not going to see it, and the kids know that. But, I mean, every once in a while, I'll go undercover to see how are they getting to the kids, and I'll be a different age every time. So,
You'll pretend to be a kid just to see if anybody solicits you.
This is important because I was pretending one day. We're actually watching the Cardinals, my husband and I decided I'm going to go on and be an 11-year-old, see how they're getting to the 11-year-old. So I pick a chat site that says, no parent permission required. We monitor. This is a safe teen chat site. We monitor. So it said, what is your name? And I said, Macy. That was my dog's name. How old are you, Macy? 11. And boom, I'm in this chat room, right? No parent permission. Within 10 seconds, there was 10 little boxes, 10 men that were trying to talk to me. And the first guy said, hey, sweetie, how's your day going? You're new on here. So he knew I was new. And I said, Not so good. I can't find my cat. I don't even have a cat. But I made a little cry face with a little kitty and just made myself have a problem. And he said, oh, sweetie, do you need an older man to come and help you find your cat? I can pick you up. Just like that. And I said, no, I'm not allowed to go out of the house. My mom is a nurse and works till midnight. I'm not even supposed to be on chat. And he said, wow, you're a naughty little girl, aren't you, Macy? And I said, I guess. And he said, what are you wearing? Strange question for somebody to ask an 11-year-old.
Yeah, and you're like a minute in.
A minute in, and I said, Mickey Mouse pajamas. And he said, what's your cup size? And I said, right now I'm drinking a 44-ounce Thirst Buster that my brother got me from Circle K. And he said, wow, Macy, you're so naive. Tell me you're not a virgin. I was like, what? That really threw me. So he gave me a problem. So if I was 11, I'd be thinking, wait a minute, are my friends not virgins? Like, I don't even like boys yet. And right now you have this problem and he swoops in to save you. I'll tell you what, honey, sex is really scary. Definitely not something you want to talk to your parents about. Definitely not something you want to ask your friends. So I'm going to be your new online boyfriend. I'll be here every day. I'm going to tell the best part of it is I never have to touch you. I never have to kiss you. So we're going to start just getting comfortable with your body. And I want a webcam with you. And so he wanted me to go in the bedroom and lock the door and get comfortable just, you know, doing some things. Well, of course, I'm a grandma. I can't go in there and act like I'm 11. But it made me sick to my stomach. It's like, this is what your kids are seeing that they're not telling you they're seeing because I talk to the kids. I'm in the junior highs and the high schools, and the kids come to me all the time. This is what they're seeing. They're up against these predators, and they don't know how to navigate it. Their brains aren't mature enough yet. And so, you know, when I do a training, then the parents are like, yeah, we're going to go through your phone, and they'll take action. But I deal with the kids that are missing, and it is by far one of the worst parts of my job because it is a sound in their voice that I will never get out of my head. Having your child die or having your child missing and not knowing what's happening to them has to be the most difficult thing.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
They're fearful. They're terrified. They think their child's not coming back. And so a lot of times I'll say, let's go through their social media and see who they were talking to. And they're like, my child changed the password. Mm. I hear it all the time. Mm. I don't have access to their Instagram or their Snapchat. Mm. And so I urge parents to make it so the kids can't, you know, change the password on you, because a lot of times we have been able to rescue them when we know who they were talking to last and who lured them off. But but you got to have a starting point.
Okay. So we got to realize there's a fight going on. We got to wake up to some things.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you hopeful about? Is there a story of a kid that's been rescued that you've just seen their life turn around and gives you a lot of hope?
Well, we have one little girl who really went through a horrible ordeal, and she was with us about 3 years, and she's a young teen now, and I took her out for her birthday last year, and I just want to see how she was doing. She got adopted, so by our house parents, our wonderful, amazing house parents adopted her and some other kids. And so I was having lunch with her, and I said, you know, what do you want to do with your life when you grow up? I just, you know, wondered if you're starting, you're a young teen now, and are you thinking about it? And she said, when I grow up, I want to be you. And it just caught me off guard, because she said, I remember everything that happened at Starbright and how you helped us and how you loved us. And I want to help find missing kids. So I want to go into the service, and I want to be like you. Yeah. And that's probably the biggest compliment anybody could ever give you. But I'm like, there's one of my whys right there.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Yeah. If people want more information on Starbright Foundation, what do they need to do?
They can go to starbrightfoundation.org. You can kind of see what we do there at the house and opportunities to volunteer if that's a field. And there's all different areas. We break it down to time, talents, and treasures. Some people want to come mow the lawn. Some people want to, you know, go look for missing kids on their lunch break or whatever they can do. And, you know, some people are good at fundraising and some people just want to write a check. Some people want to share a talent, you know, sing with the kids or teach the kids the life skill cooking class. We work a lot with the foster kids because they're a big at-risk group. Mm-hmm. And so we do extended services for foster children. And, you know, anybody that's willing to serve, I can just tell you, whether it's a nudge or whether it's a whisper, whether it's sometimes just a feeling, God will take it from there. And it's not about you waiting for the door to open. It's about you knowing the door's always been open and he's just waiting for you to walk through it.
Yeah. Thanks for fighting for our kids. Thanks for the counsel today. Yeah. I want to encourage all the parents, regardless of how old your kid is, to just take what Lori was talking about to heart. And let's get a little more vigilant and aggressive in looking out for our kids, especially in social media and through technology. And thanks for doing what you do, Lori. I'm going to take a moment and pray for you and just pray for this issue and for people maybe that God is nudging right now. Okay. Let's pray. Okay. Father, we thank you that you work through your people. And I'm just thinking of the reality of evil wins when good people sit by and do nothing. And so I pray that we would trust you and that we would take steps of faith. I'm thinking of the verse in the Bible that just says, we'll fight the good fight. That's about the gospel, that's about the truth, but it also includes justice. So I pray we would fight the good fight and run the race that you have for us to the finish line. Give us wisdom in protecting our children. Jesus, come quickly and wipe out all evil for all time. But in the meantime, help us to protect our children and be wise. I pray for Lori. I pray that you would bless her efforts. I pray for all those that are serving and fighting and rescuing kids and standing in the gap and stepping into harm's way. I pray for supernatural protection in the name of Jesus. I pray for insightful spiritual God-ordained wisdom for each one, and I pray that you would bring redemption and new life to thousands of kids, and I pray that you would bring justice to those who are doing evil. And so help us to do our part for people that are being nudged right now. I pray we would take steps, and Father, I pray we would just follow you and do what you would have us do, and we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Loving God, Loving People podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you are listening so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this conversation, we'd love it if you rated the podcast and left us a review. Also, sharing this with a friend is a great way to help more people meet, know, and follow Jesus. And lastly, you are always welcome to join us online for one of our services every week at live.sv.cc or go to locations.sv.cc to join us in person at one of our physical locations. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.